The following podcast contains explicit language.
Lisa Chase and all her friends loved Bill Clinton from the beginning.
After a lot of years in the political wilderness, if you were a liberal Democrat in Manhattan in 1993, Bill Clinton was what you dreamed of. You know, that kind of voluble intelligence that he had was like that was an aphrodisiac for, I think, lots of people, women and men.
Chase spent the second half of the 1990s working as an editor at the New York Observer, a small weekly newspaper known for covering Manhattan society in columns like Sex and the City, which became an HBO series. Chase was a liberal in her 30s, and as a woman, she always thought of Bill Clinton as being on her side. A lot of feminists did, because broadly speaking, his policies reflected the agenda of the women's movement. That's not to say all left-leaning women saw Clinton as their ally. He had alienated many supporters, particularly women of color, with his approach to welfare reform and other issues. Even so, Clinton got credit for being pro-choice. During his first week in office, he marked the 20th anniversary of Roe v. Wade by lifting restrictions on abortion that had been put in place by his Republican predecessors.
Today, I am acting to separate our national health and medical policy from the divisive conflict over abortion.
Later, many feminist organizations cheered Clinton for signing legislation like the Violence Against Women Act, also for appointing Ruth Bader Ginsburg to the Supreme Court.
In her pioneering work in behalf of the women of this country, she has compiled a truly historic record of achievement in the finest tradition.
And for installing more women in senior positions than any administration in history.
He was enthusiastic about working with women, you know. He did not come across as a sexist. You just felt that what he loved was intelligence. And he liked women.
Chase knew that Clinton had a history of sexual indiscretion, but his apparent inability to control himself was almost part of the appeal.
He was like that guy who was so great but flawed, and you were trying to figure him out, right? You were just trying to unlock it. And if you could unlock it, you could potentially fix him.
The Monica Lewinsky story broke in January of 1998. About a week later, Chase was at a bar with a bunch of her friends. They were talking about the scandal, the only thing that anyone wanted to talk about.
One of us said, it might have been me, might have been one of the other women, well, would you sleep with the president? You know, would you fuck the president? And every woman said, yeah.
The conversation gave Chase an idea. What if the Observer brought together a group of notable New York women and asked them the question on the record? Would they fuck Bill Clinton? Why or why not? The Observer's focus group included Katie Royfe, Erica Jong, Patricia Marks, and a half dozen others. Each woman was influential in her field, and most of them were somehow involved in the public dialogue around sex. The moderator was Francine Prose, and the location was La Bernadette, a fancy restaurant in Midtown that was chosen in part because it was owned by a woman. The resulting piece ran in February of 1998, under the headline, New York Supergals Love That Naughty Prez. At this point, Clinton was still denying that he'd had an affair with Lewinsky, but everyone quoted in the piece pretty much took it for granted that he had. And they didn't care. Patricia Marks talked about how she liked the president more now. Katie Royfe said that this virile president was suddenly fulfilling a forbidden fantasy of an old-fashioned, taboo, aggressive male. Erica Jong declared, I want a president to be alive from the waist down. The through line was that these women were kind of excited for Monica Lewinsky, and maybe even a little envious of her.
We were projecting ourselves onto her. It was almost as if a lot of the women in that room felt this is a right that we'd fought for, the right to pursue powerful men and in whatever way, you know, professionally or, you know, sexually.
Journalist Marjorie Williams, writing in Vanity Fair, said the Observer piece was the most embarrassing thing she had read in a long time. Williams, who died in 2005, called out the women who participated in the roundtable for the gleefully raunchy way in which they had talked about the Clinton-Lewinsky affair. Why, Williams asked, do feminists find it so hard to acknowledge the ugliness of this arrangement? As Williams's piece itself demonstrated, not everyone did. Today, it's conventional wisdom that all feminists hypocritically turn their backs on Monica Lewinsky. In fact, the scandal provoked an intense debate within the feminist movement about sex, power, consent, and priorities. For some, it was obvious that Clinton had victimized Lewinsky and needed to be thrown overboard despite his policies. For others, like Lisa Chase, it was just as obvious that the scandal was part of a political war in which Clinton was the good guy.
You know, we felt that there was this incredibly ridiculous thing happening and this incredibly dangerous thing happening. And we felt defensive for our president, you know. And we weren't sure what was going to happen. We weren't sure who was going to win.
It was clear from the beginning how Clinton's enemies were going to react to the Lewinsky revelation. The more interesting question was, what would his friends think? What were the arguments and ideas that divided liberals, and feminists in particular, at the height of the scandal? And what did it mean that Monica Lewinsky herself had always considered her relationship with Clinton to be a consensual love affair? This is Slow Burn. I'm your host, Leon Neyfakh.
Everybody's talking about the feminists and their absence here.
I think those that would accuse the feminist movement of having a double standard don't understand well what we do.
As women continue to talk around the country about the man, the women, and the presidency.
Episode 7, Bedfellows.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.